Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Superfan Chats. In this episode we are going to be chatting about episodes 19 to 25. So if you haven't listened to those episodes yet, go back and listen to them and this will be a nice reminder, and then we get a chance to chat about it with other superfans. With me today, as kind of a special surprise, you all know Superfan Hannah.
Yeah, you do.
And she is with me today, so you are in safe hands. But also joining us, we have the incredible superfan, Pippa Beckford. Woo! Say hi, Pippa.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm really excited about this because you are effectively like the foreknowledge on Ross Tull.
That's big boots to fill, so let's find out. But
I'm sure we will. So basically, I'm going to sit back now and let these guys talk about all of the episodes and just pipe in every now and then with some off comment. Sound good?
Sure. Great. Yeah, let's do it.
We'll take over. You relax.
Oh, you're all too kind. But we do have a lot to talk about here because it's seven episodes. But fortunately, it's like five episodes of this make up this second arc of the campaign so far. And it's been exciting. But we also need to go back and talk about what happened on the way to Vernock Rise. Yep. And we've got a nice little festival to chat about. So who was doing the homework for episode 19? That was you, Hannah.
That would be me.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to keep these sort of mini recaps pretty snappy. So I'll dive right in with episode 19, Hidden Histories, which is the episode where, notably, Enkidu is taken over by the evil guy inside him and attacks Juna. And Juna gets her familiar, which we have learned is Ruana.
Yeah,
the Witch in the Woods is actually now that Ruana's soul in some way has become Juna's familiar. She's still with us in some way. We get an inkling into Enkidu's backstory. Actually, more than an inkling. We get pretty much like a large chunk of Enkidu's backstory. There's like a lot he's not telling us at the same time. I'm sure there's all kinds of details, but he does get pretty vulnerable pretty fast after Juna manages to evade his attack. And we learn that basically Enkidu has a connection to the bastard son of the king. And Enkidu grew up in a brothel, which was attacked by someone called Alcibiades. Where does Daryl get these names?
Such a cool name. It's so good.
All of them are so good. And so this person basically also is the person that attacked Enkidu and the gang of his mates. There was a big explosion and basically Enkidu woke up after the explosion and essentially all his friends and Alcibiades were now inside him, in his head. And so that's how he's been able to communicate with they're like his patrons now, if we're talking warlock mechanics, but they're also his friends. And so Enkidu has realized he doesn't have control over Alcibiades and he needs to get him out like ASAP. So he confesses all of this to the group after almost killing Juna or attacking Juna, who manages to not get hurt. And it's really lovely. And Gwen is really sweet to him.
She is.
She's so kind to him. And basically gives him an out for burning down the library. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm sure it wasn't you. And I'm just, oh, it's given me hope for Gwenkidu all over again. Then The other big thing that happens with that is Enkidu realizes, finally it lands with him, that he wasn't just out of the world for a month. 6 years have gone by and he has just missed 6 whole years. So this is the moment where it actually finally computes for him that that's what's happened. And he has no idea what's happened in the last 6 years. So they then all decide after this big revelation to continue their journey to Vernock Rise, the city where they are supposed to meet Heron Ilwyn. And they get there and they realise there's the Heart of Spring Festival going on, which is a festival for the Luckbringer, the goddess. And there's flowers everywhere. They love it. They decide they're going to join in because they want to blend in with everyone. And then they go to meet Heron Ilwyn, who basically says, I'm part of the consortium, but I think it's built on a rotten foundation. And I quote when he says that. Partially because Kralovin Svelte was a founding member, so he wants all of them to investigate and be his researchers and investigate these different locations that are linked to different people in the Arcanist Consortium. And so they do choose one, and that's how they sort of end up deciding where to go. He also pays them 150 gold each up front. And Orin practically
falls over.
I was
going to say, much to Orin. Yes.
Yeah. He's like, wait, we what? We get what? So that's kind of really what happens in this episode, is we get a massive Enkidu lore dump, and then they arrive and chat to Heron Ilwyn, who is basically like, this group I'm a part of is super corrupt. Let's bring them down from the inside. Here's a chunk of money. Off you go. Really dangerous. And that's episode 19 in a nutshell.
Great.
I mean, well rounded up as well. I mean, I think for everyone, that moment when Enkidu was standing over Juno with the sword, and it, again, David's music, very, very clever, just to put in that almost like psycho sound. My heart jumped. Don't know about
you. Yeah.
Just not really expecting it. Came out of left field. But taught us that if you ever hear Enkidu try and make a patron check and he rolls a natural one, bad shit is about to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to meet the bad guy. Yeah.
What was his name again? Alcibiades.
Yep, Alcibiades.
These are great names, yeah. Daryl. I mean, because you've got Gilgamesh is the potential king. Who's also in there, who I don't think we've met yet, because we've met Hina, we've met Light, and we've obviously met Alcibiades. I think that's... Oh, no, there's another
there
one.
There might be another
really
one, but I don't think it's Gilgamesh.
There's Cal is the other name.
Cal, that's it. Yes, his brother's
so
in his
many
head.
Characters, Daryl. So many characters, all in one. Yeah. How did you do it?
I mean, I struggled to write one character backstory, let alone seven.
Oh, Sam, is this the appropriate place to drop your theory about why Enkidu is a Hexblade warlock?
Yeah, I did kind of talk about this before, and it has maybe been shot down, because I might have mentioned this to a cast member, and they were like, no. But yeah, I did kind of have this thought, because we know from the previous game that Daryl asks David whether these guys were the same organization that jumped him, why all of this happened for him. So we know that Alcibiades was the leader of this group of the Hex, and that they may have had something to do with the king as well. That's not quite been cleared up yet. But I did wonder, because he is a warlock and he summons packed weapons, and one of them is the weapon of somebody who works for the Hex, that maybe it is the Hex Blade's curse why they are inside him, and that he's maybe taken it literally. I like to think that's the case, but I now know that it's probably not.
I like it. I mean, even if it's not true, it's neat.
Thank you. We'll pretend it's real. It's real in this space.
Safe space.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where I was, yeah, we've got to Vernock Rise.
Mm.
And there were several options that were put forward by Heron Ilwyn.
Oh,
I'm just trying to think off the top of my head.
The one that I was really hoping they would go for, but they were like, we're going to go over this way because it's closer, was the tower that can only be seen by moonlight.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Ooh. Don't worry. I think we'll get there.
But yes, they've gone towards the Wingthrups, who control, I think it's the east side of the forest.
I think they're in the... Are they in the north?
You said something about northeast.
So it's east of the Lake Ward,
yeah.
I believe is the thing. So the Lake Ward is this like massive area. You know, Rosthall is a part. It's on the border of the Lake Ward. But yeah, they kind of decide that one's the best one to go to, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After much discussion.
Yeah.
I think they decided to go in all three directions at one point or another.
Yeah, exactly. Just split the party. Why not? Go everywhere. Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen?
One thing I really loved was Enkidu explaining to Orin that the reason that Ilwyn had given them so much money is because it was super dangerous. So, because Oren was like, oh, we just get it up front. What? And he was like, yep. And if we do it, we'll get more. But basically, he doesn't know his investment's going anywhere. So he's just dropping some money and seeing what's going to happen. Sure. We might die.
Yeah.
Poor little Oren.
It's so cute the way that he reacts to it. And I believed every moment of him just being like, oh, it's ours. It's ours now. And then just like the thing that Ben does so well, which is just a, oh. And you can tell so much from an oh. And Daryl so quickly picking up on it, like, oh yeah, this is how somebody reacts when they see more money in one place than they've ever seen before. And it was quite a cute, there were several cute moments.
There were. It's a good way of them summing up their kind of past experiences without even having to say anything.
Yeah. But it kind of, I also did get the impression that from Heron that these guys are very much a means to an end. They understand enough about the consortium that he can hire them, but there's no trust. There's no, like, you know, if they are in trouble, I don't think Heron Ilwyn is going to come to their aid.
No.
It's more that, like, they are a loaded gun that he can point off in a direction and escape all suspicions from the higher-ups. That's the impression that I got from Heron Ilwyn anyway. Mm. And, you know, they talk about this whole organization being corrupt. Is he a climber? You know, is this a way of him getting to the next level of the consortium?
Mm.
Or is he, has he really got good intentions and like, no, this organization is corrupt. I want to clean it up.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
So suspicious. And then he tells them all to buy each other a present for the Heart of Spring Festival, which I believe leads us to the next episode.
Yeah.
It does.
So go on, Piffa. Tell us about episode 20.
Shall I do a summing up of Luckbringer's Blessing?
Oh, please do.
Thank you. So episode 20. So obviously our party are in Vernock Rise and they've been asked to buy gifts for each other for this Heart of Spring Festival. And they've kind of each drawn names out of a hat so that they only have to buy one present for each other, a bit like a secret Santa.
Secret goddess.
Secret goddess, exactly. That makes much more sense, doesn't it, saying it that way?
Brilliant.
So mostly this episode is just about them finding their present and us twigging quite easily about who's got who and trying to keep it a secret and then accidentally a couple of people say who they've got for their sort of gift. So the first person is Enkidu, and he sets off, he goes into the craft quarter and finds a trinket shop. He finds this pied pipe, and he haggles the shopkeeper. He's assured that it's magical, and the shopkeeper asks for an awful lot of gold, but he manages to haggle them down to 80.
So it starts off at like 120 or
something like that. Yeah. It's a high.
It's ludicrous.
High price. So yeah, Enkidu does a good job of haggling him down quite a bit. Then you've got Oren, who finds his shiny shield and he gets it engraved with symbols of Dram and the Western Pines and the Iron Chain. Juna, she goes to a bookstore. She finds two books for Oren. So he gets this book of notes, which he ends up using. And he also gets Alchemy for Beginners. And she manages to get herself a little discount by charming the shopkeeper as well. Puts a little tea bag in the bag. It's a little bit of a giveaway. My favourite one is Gwen, who manages, she bumps into this Rufus and he leads her to the tipple. And she goes inside and very innocently she pays 100 gold and gets the two lovely friends and a tea caddy to be delivered in the evening to Drake's. It's good that she pays for it up front. I love that bit about, oh, I should probably pay for it now in case I spend the money.
there's so much implied in that scene.
I know, it's wonderful. Oh,
just my favourite run of double entendre is the whole way through.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about it in
expertly
a second.
Expertly played by both David and Grace.
Then Gaius heads to the upper ward and pops into this shop, meets a very kind of haughty shopkeeper, spots a music box he likes and then leaves the shop and comes back disguised as Heron Ilwyn, because, you know, what could possibly go wrong with that? Picks up the trinket box and decides that he's not going to pay for it and sends the bill on to the consortium instead. So that's all the gifts. Then the party go out and they kind of join in with the procession. They follow the crowd down through the streets, reach the open field, receive their lovely flowers, plant them in the field, have a nice evening. And then at the end, as the sun sets, all make their way back to Drake's, where the two friends are waiting for Juna and Gwen.
So good. I mean, you know, they kind of talk about it the next one and they deny that anything happened. I don't believe that's true. I think there was something that happened and that Gwendolyn of Juna have just sworn themselves to secrecy, because Gwendolyn stays.
Well, this is the thing, they stayed the night.
Yeah.
Mm. so good.
And there's
it's
only
so, funny.
So much you could do with tea.
I think two other favourite moments were Orin trying to draw a design for the shield and the phrase, oh, what, you mean like a bush at the bottom?
Yep.
And Orin going, no. And then also Gaius pretending to be Heron Ilwyn was also, I mean, Chris was so funny. Just,
yeah.
It was so funny. But also when he was like, oh yes, just build a consortium and he forges a signature. I mean, that's going to come back somewhere down the line.
I know.
It's good.
Absolutely.
These decisions that they make, these snap decisions, they're like, oh, that's a good idea. And then David has such a way of just making you like, you can hear the concern in his head or him going like, oh, okay.
Yeah, the voice goes up, doesn't it? Definitely.
Yeah, all right, you're doing that. Which is like, you can just hear doorways have opened for David where he's like, oh, okay, you know, this can come back and haunt them in X, Y, or Z way.
Absolutely.
Very much
looking
forward
to that. Yeah, I think
that
one's up there with the I punch an old woman for me. I'm going to impersonate our employer and send a massive bill to the very powerful group of mages that we're supposed to be investigating. There's no way that this is a terrible idea. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
It just, unlike I'm going to punch an old woman, the consequences are probably going to come back a bit further down the line rather than be so immediate.
Plus, it's like the whole him being an Arcanist doesn't help him at all, really, in the grand scheme of things. It doesn't get him a discount. The shopkeeper doesn't treat him any better because he's being an Arcanist.
No.
There is no benefit to him actually. You know, he might as well have walked out on the road, been like, okay, I'm going to come back in as a noble or something, or just, you know, somebody that looks like they've got a lot of money. Or to be honest, just as Gaius would work as well.
Yeah, it's just Gaius all over.
Was it worth it, Guy?
I love it. I'm bitterly disappointed that either Gwen or Enkidu did not pull each other's names out of the hat, because I would love to have seen what they bought each other.
Yeah,
that's a good question, actually. What would they have bought each other?
I feel we may have to put this question to Daryl in the next No Small Questions.
There's one bit where Gwen just keeps giving Enkidu flowers, and I'm just like, oh, come on, guys. Come on. It's going to happen.
Get it on. It'll happen. We've got to wait, though, because they have, I have spoken about this. I'm pretty sure in No Small Questions there was a particular question about when will Gwenkidu happen.
I mean, I kind of asked about Gwenkidu.
You did, didn't you? Yeah. And they didn't deny the possibility that it could happen. They were just saying, like, it has to happen organically.
I think they said sort of episode 100, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that might have been me. I don't know.
And maybe that was
me. Me dreaming, anyway. I think maybe I said 50 and they said 100, but I'm sure we can talk them down from that lofty tree. But otherwise, just a really kind of nice, heartwarming, festive episode at a time when we all needed a bit of festive cheer, let's be honest, with all the rule changes in the real world.
Indeed.
It was just kind of nice to see them having a, you know, no conflict that they didn't bring upon themselves. You know, and going out and buying cute little presents for each other.
It was lovely.
It was very sweet.
And I'm sure none of those presents would have adverse repercussions either. Like, I wouldn't mention a Pied Pipe that he might have tried on Orin.
Yeah.
Because that definitely won't crop up again in the future. But funny enough, let's talk about the next episode and see if it does. So
such
the next
a
episode was
segue
episode
there.
20. Well, thank you. Episode 21, On the Road Again. This one was quite an item-heavy episode, because obviously them giving gifts in the last one, it was a lot of finding out what those did, but also kind of working out what items in the past did as well. So first things, as Hannah said, they choose their path and they decide that they're going to go up north towards the Lake Ward, but not before they contact Heron Ilwyn, because they basically want to work out if there is an agenda, if there's like, this one would be the first one to go for. So they eventually use Orin's book of notes, which works kind of like the sending spell. However, they can't send a message back. And he just basically blurts out this like, oh, you know, which of these tasks that you've sent us on do you want us to do first? And that will have appeared somewhere in his room. So he kind of quickly gets this message back from Heron just being like, don't do that again.
Yeah, from gritted teeth.
Yeah, and knowing how the spell sending works as well, Heron would have cast this 3 times for Orin just to basically get this point across of like, I don't care what you do, just go and do one of them because they're all very, very important. So feeling a little bit like knocked back by that, they're just like, okay, yeah, we'll go up there because it's closer to Twaintide for Juna. They kind of want to check out the Golden Forest, which is where this particular mission is happening. So they all decide like that's where we're going to go. And they set off on their route after... I think Orin picks up some potions and supplies from his new alchemy book. Gaius buys a ridiculously expensive potion. And Orin also picks up a pearl, which I do think is a good plot point. But while they're on the road and they start discovering what these items are doing, Juna finds out that the wand that they took from the ex-Lady Vondel, she kind of casts it on a tree and she realizes that this is a wand of revealing. So it's able to cast fairy fire. We don't know on how many enemies at this point, potentially just the one, but basically make them light up and anybody that targets them has advantage. Amazingly useful. We also have a bit of a powwow between Gaius and Orin as they talk about their memory swapping experience. We find out a little bit about Gaius's mum. Not enough, in my opinion, but we do find out that she's, in Gaius's words anyway, no longer around. But there was like one moment in his life, at least, that she was proud of him for this performance. So we hopefully touch on a bit of home truth with Gaius, which is quite cute. But it does make me wonder what happened to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, right, we'll come back to that. as they bed down for the night, Orin starts to notice this strange melody playing in his head. And he kind of like tunes his goggles and uses detect magic. But then he's distracted because he learns that Juna's new tea caddy is also magic, which prompts them to find out that this is a tea caddy of holding, which is just awesome. And then kind of like prompts Orin and Gwen to get all silly and they're like trying to stuff it with different things. They like put a hammer in there and then they try and chuck a spear in there and like 50 foot of rope as some kind of like joke for her. But what they do notice in this moment, they do like trying to find the source of this music. Orin learns that Gaius's pipe is magical and is giving off like an enchantment ping. But it is found out that the music that he's hearing in his head is not originating from this pipe. Very strange. So we get to the next morning and they arrive in this kind of like small village area called Allfield. And they find a bunch of... It's two members of Lord Beryon's militia, his army. And they're handing out drinks to potential army recruits. And they kind of get like caught in this conversation with them there and deftly kind of say, oh, no, we signed up at Beryon Field, so we don't need to do that. But they try and get a little bit more information. And they do find out that there is another contender for the throne. So it's not just Lord Beryon going for it. There's also Timon Prevost, who is definitely in contention, but doesn't want to keep things the way that they are. He wants to bring things back to the way they were before the Mortal Uprising. So definitely like certain races being above other races, kind of getting the inkling that this guy might be an elf, potentially, just based on how prevalent they were before the Mortal Uprising.
Ah, fantasy fascism.
I know, right? But we also find out that Lord Beryon managed to get himself over 1,000 new recruits from that drive that they did at Beryon Fields. So it's clearly working, and it's clearly worked on Lord Rosthall as well, because he's given them permission to be there today to get more people. So I think Frosting could be involved in many areas in the higher echelon as well. Mm-hmm. So like after that, we have a moment where they talk about their purposes, and Enkidu goes all, you know, grand purposey, Gilgamesh for the throne, and like, you know, we want to bring down the monarchy as it is and set up our own, which Orin's like, whoa, slow down, mate. We're level 4. Don't want to be taking on kings at the moment. But there is a great quote from Enkidu where he says, "The journey of 1,000 miles always begins with one step." I don't know if that's a Darylism, but I love it.
Oh.
And it sums up Enkidu perfectly.
Put that one on a picture and stick it on Instagram. I love
absolutely.
It.
I know, right? That's a meme.
Inspirational
right?
quotes.
Yeah.
And then that kind of the episode draws to a close as they leave Allfield and they make camp for the night. And it's Gaius and Juna on watch just over this campsite as Orin just randomly stands up and sleepwalks over to Gaius and like stands behind him staring at him. Mm. And then when they wake him up, it's very clear that he can still hear this pipe music in his head. creepy.
Spooky.
And that's, yeah, that's episode 21.
I have to say shout out to David for the amazing pipe creepy music. I think it's brilliant. Mm. Every time you hear it, you're like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, because he builds into it before they actually reference it as well.
Yeah.
Super clever.
Yeah, when you're talking about it now, it's like I can hear it in
yeah,
my mind.
Yeah, that tune, it does stick
in your
head,
distinctive.
Doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know how he did it, but it's like, I feel like I'm being controlled by the pipe.
Yeah.
So creepy.
It does sound very Pied Pipey, doesn't it? It's how I imagine like somebody who's very, very good at the recorder trying to entice me outside.
Oh, this was a good episode. It was, a lot of it was like them finding out what all their stuff did, which was really cool.
And they've got some pretty high powered stuff now. Like I say high powered, a lot of them are first level spells, but they have a lot of spells that they can cast without expending a slot now, because they've got the Ring of Suggestion. They've got, can't remember what Gaius's wand does now, but they now have a wand of fairy fire. So they're getting a lot of like classic bard abilities, but in items that they don't have to cast those spells.
Yeah,
so and Juna as well, who has the wand, is just instantly like, oh, I can cast magic. Gwen, here you go. Chuck this at a tree. But, you know, they're a lot more formidable than they used to be, than the just like kind of hack and slash of the first arc.
Mm.
Can anybody remember what Gaius's wand does now?
No.
No.
He hasn't used it since.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't remember. It was something interesting, but it's hard to keep track of all these items.
I know. We need like a Trello board or something like that so that we can keep it all here just in case we need to chat about it. They've got the bony finger. Nah, I don't know. Definitely it said it in the title, On the Road Again. That was very much the feel that you got from this episode. It's like, right, okay, what have we learned from before? Where are we going now? Beginning of something new.
Yeah, it very much feels the picture is very much getting bigger. It's a case of like, you know, it feels like the hobbits are leaving the Shire.
Yeah.
And exactly.
All this political intrigue, all the wider world, it's like the map is getting filled in and filled in and filled in, like all these pieces of the puzzle are beginning to come together. And it's so wonderful how they're learning about it as the audience are learning about it. And then some of them already have these great backstories tied in. So there's so much intrigue. It's so exciting.
Yeah, it's great.
This is what you wanted as well, isn't it, Hannah? When we did our first superfan chats and we were talking about it, you were like, oh, yeah, the wider world. And oh, you know, just can't wait to get going. It's like David's listened to that and go, huh? Okay, tick. Okay, who worked on episode 22? Who took this one?
Me! Episode 22. I mean, so first of all, the title, A Little Night Music. For all the theatre nerds out there, what a brilliant title.
I'm enjoying these titles generally.
Oh, yeah. They're so clever. This one, most of it was trying to work out how the pipe works. What does it do? Who moves where? How long does it last? What's going on? So Orin's sleepwalking, Gaius plays it again and casts whatever spell it is over Juna. And then the music vanishes from Orin's head. But then this comes back later because he's not free from the enchantment. So there's something weird going on with this pipe. It's super powerful.
It's really OP.
It's super powerful in a way that is really ominous. Then Orin and Gwen, when they take the next watch, they decide to play a joke on Juna by storing things in the tea caddy of holding. And there's this whole very farcical sequence where they're trying different items, like spear is too big. Can we put something alive in it? Can we put Ruana in it? And David sort of helpfully says like, yeah, if you put things in there, they will suffocate and die. So maybe not. So in the morning when they wake up, they're like giggling like little children and basically are like, Juna, what's in your caddy? Like trying to get her to figure it out. And she's very excited by it. And Enkidu reiterates the DM's warning about don't put living things in there because they won't survive. Oh, and there's an amazing moment where Juna tells the whole story of the woodworker.
Oh, God.
Yes.
It's so
amazing.
Good.
This whole story where she's like, oh, DM, can I tell the story? And he's like, yeah, go for it. And Vicky's written this beautiful story that is like a fairy tale.
Which apparently David knew nothing about as well.
Yeah, yeah, she just puts it in there. I mean, what a treat. It was so great. It was like story time with Juna. Makes me want her to read me stories all the time.
Bonus content.
Oh my God.
Yes, please.
Bedtime stories with Juna. Vicky, please make it happen.
Yes.
Oh my God, I would pay so much money for that. Put it on Sign Patreon.
Yeah, yeah, just add an extra 15 quid and we'll have it as the highest perk on Patreon. Yeah. It's a house
so
visit
good.
From Vicky.
And then we get a little bit more about Orin after that. Little bit more. Not too much, though. Just a bit more about why he wants to go north. Mysterious. And then they set up camp for the night again, and both Juna and Orin are sleepwalking now.
Oh, God.
And go to stand over Gaius. And they're like, what is going on with this flute? Maybe we should put it in the caddy. And as soon as they start to do that, basically Gaius's head feels like it's going to explode with this horrible screamy flute music. I mean, this makes me think this thing is pretty cursed. I know, yeah. Sam and I have talked off mic about how the flute is definitely, definitely cursed, 100%. Even though it doesn't seem like it. But like, yeah, agreed. It's super cursed because, yeah, oh. Oh,
I mean, it's
spooky.
Got its own agenda. Like, it bonds to a person. And like, oh, yeah, definitely cursed.
And it does make you feel like, how on earth can they ever get rid of it if they want to or need to? It's going to just be with them forever.
Exactly.
And how many people is it going to enchant if you keep playing the music at people?
Yeah, this is what we chat about the other day, because it's this idea that, right, okay, so you... Say you're in battle and Gaius is like, oh, actually, you know, having them move over there and then, you know, somebody can get through. You play this music to them and they're hooked on this same magical line. Does that mean if Gaius doesn't do this stuff with the flute and they go to bed, does this person get up wherever they are in the world and just start walking towards him? How far do they walk before this magic ends? Are they walking for the entire time that they're sleeping? Will they wake up three towns over? Like, it's...
God, that's terrifying.
It's unknown, but, you know, he could have... If he plays this on enough people, he could just like, oh, you know what? 100 people are following me wherever I go.
It's super spooky. It's super spooky.
Terrifying.
And we just... The other spooky thing is we don't know. We don't know what it does. No one's identified it properly. And no one will identify it properly. I think that's coming up. So... After trying to work out what is going on, they're like, we'll just get to Rosthall and hopefully someone there's going to help us. When they arrive in Rosthall, they learn there's a serial killer on the loose. And guess what? He's called the Faceless Footman because he changes his frickin' face.
Oh,
that's
God.
Not scary and disturbing. So he can change his appearance. So nobody knows what the murderer actually looks like. What an amazing way to bring a fantasy serial killer in. I mean, I've thought about murder mysteries in my games before and I'm like, oh, but how could they do it when there's a world full of magic? Well, changing your appearance. That's a really good way of doing it.
That's a good
well
way
done,
doing
David.
It.
Really, really smart. And also disturbing. Your brain.
This whole like, yeah,
me.
Can't trust your friends, can't trust your neighbors anymore, can't even trust the officials because like, could be wearing your face.
Well, speaking of officials, there is an arcanist there who was summoned to assist with the capture of the killer. And the killer has recently been apprehended. Or has he?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So they decide to stick around in Rosthall to find out a bit more about the Faceless Footman and the arcanist. They go to the garrison to see if they can have a look at the prisoner, see what's going on. Juna changes Ruana into a mouse to see if the mouse can go into the prison and communicate and see something, but they're not successful. And then as they're leaving, a really suspicious looking person approaches them, ostensibly harmlessly just for a chat, but they recognize him as a member of the Hex. And that's where the episode ends.
Creepy. I mean, literally, yeah. I think David described him as creepy, shifty,
yep.
Odd-looking guy.
Who, shady later, guy. I mean,
because we're going to learn about this anyway, whose name is effectively Jerk.
Yeah, yes, Jarek.
Like, this guy is definitely not your friend.
I mean, this episode was actually, it was very funny, but it was really disturbing because we have a definitely cursed pipe, a serial killer, and a gang member. All in pretty quick succession.
Yeah, definitely a setup for this kind of idea that like they're not out of their depth, but the problems are continuing and there's more that they've got to deal with. And I do wonder whether, because David spoke about this when they were talking about the tea caddy and it being a tea caddy of holding in the previous episode, David did mention, like, oh, depending on what people rolled and, you know, blah, 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 we had spoken about items that we might want. So was it David being like, okay, you can have the item that you want, but there's now a massive catch to it because of the way that you rolled, that he hadn't even, you know, imparted to Daryl. But yeah, it's the fact that the things on their person are messing with them, and with a lot of them. and like you say, the bringing in of this faceless footman, this murderer, and like suspects could be anywhere. And it got them into this line of thinking of like, okay, well, they've arrested somebody, but is this the right person? Anyone that I talk to now could be the murderer. Like, you know, Gaius went to sort Bessie out, and it's like, okay, no, we need to keep Gaius with us because we now definitely can't split the party. It just gave the whole episode this ominous tone.
Mm, yeah, definitely.
Which was really needed after such a happy-go-lucky Christmas episode.
All the tension.
Building big contrast back up between the two towns as well.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like he lulled us into a full sense of security with this lovely heart of spring and everyone's happy, there's flowers everywhere, and then suddenly it's like, haha, don't get too comfortable.
Because it was also like the NPCs that they had in town that were like, oh no, they've been caught now. And then I think somebody mentions like, oh well, what if it's not them? And like, it's the way David describes their like worst fears being realized. You're like, no, don't start that. Seeing their fear of it kind of made you think like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
David wouldn't just drop this in and then not have it crop up later.
I'm going to say, plus I might be completely off on this, but if they can change their face, how do we know there's just one of them?
Right, exactly. Well, no, I'm sure it'll be fine because obviously they get reassurance in the next episode, right?
Yeah, so much reassurance.
Sure, yeah.
Pippa, what do you know about the next episode?
Shall I move on?
Yeah, go for it.
this episode, The Red House, it starts with this kind of conversation with Jerick, however Vicky chooses to pronounce his name.
Jerk.
Jerk face.
And yeah, I mean, mostly kind of Orin and Enkidu, they both very firmly decline his offer of help. And Gwen, in her innocence, is like, well, why don't we want his help? And yeah, they explain to her exactly why they don't want this particular person's help. So they kind of try and enter, but the guards tell them to come back in the morning. They want to have a look at the library and things like that.
Oh yeah.
And they have a little chat with these guards, and they're like, yeah, no, I can't let you in. Come back in the morning. But they also mention that the arcanist, Clayne Iovet, is staying at the Red House. So knowing that they've got, you know, a knight to kill, they decide, well, I think it's Gwen's suggestion that they...
Sorry, good choice of words there. A knight to kill.
Hey.
Sorry, that would have been a good name for the episode. Carry
that
on.
Would have been. So she decides that they can try and use her kind of family name and her noble connections to, in Orin's words, posh their way into the house. So, yeah, they successfully kind of talk their way in, and they wait in the sitting room, and they meet the arcanist, who's a very kind of bumbling, kind of head full of chaos, but very kind of jovial. Again, I think Vicky describes him as Father Christmas.
But way more pompous.
Yeah. Over dinner, they have a good old conversation with him, and he explains about how he found the faceless footman by reading everyone's minds in the town, and how this particular person's mind was very suspicious and thinking about all these murders they've just committed. Judah gets really suspicious of him and casts Detect Thoughts and realises that he's actually reading everybody in the room as well, which is not great given the mission that they've just been assigned to partake in. And Gaius tries to kind of distract him by presenting the pipe and saying, hey, look at this pipe. Can you give me some more information about what it is? And explains kind of the problems they've been having with it. He takes a little look at it and just tells him it's an attention-seeking pipe and that it's pretty harmless. And as the conversation continues, this arcanist then decides to delve deeper into Gwen's mind. And she's kind of desperately trying to keep him away from the thoughts about their mission, about the kind of consortium conspiracy. And she's trying to think about her mother. And she thinks she's done this successfully, but leaves the table pretty quickly after this. And the rest of them follow suit as well. I think Juna kind of messages everybody else and realises what's gone on. They head upstairs to their rooms and they decide to kind of share some rooms just in case something happens in the night with this kind of arcanist inside. There's a lovely moment where they bounce on the beds the next morning to make them look slept in.
Oh, yeah. Because they ordered so many rooms.
They ordered 5 rooms, yeah. Yeah. You know, if you're going to posh your way in, you do it properly, don't you? So
yeah, of course.
they steal some breakfast as well. So they go down to breakfast the next morning and they pop a very nice croissant inside the tea caddy. Take that with them for the journey. And then they head to the library. They split up to do their own researching. And as they are sat in a corner, Juna and Gaius notice a figure with the face of Gwen in librarian's clothes, carrying a stack of books, walk straight past them. And that's where the episode ends.
So disturbing. God.
Big episode.
I totally forgot how joyfully I reacted to Orin discovering there was a library in the town.
I know.
It was so cute when they were like, oh yeah, there's the library. And he was like, library? Library? Yeah. Like a little puppy that's just smelled food, like, for me?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the biggest library in the world, but it's the biggest one you've ever seen.
It's yeah.
Like, oh, it's so cute. Go in. Oh, little Orin.
I mean, he is the kind of the little sweetheart of the group, let's be honest. We all have a soft spot for Orin. Mm. And after Enkidu burnt all of the books that he wanted to read before, there's definitely a big part of us that's like, come on, David, how many books have you really written for this campaign? Please let Orin read them all.
I know. And Orin doesn't realise how funny he is sometimes as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was that. And then the thing we talked about last episode, which was Gwen throwing her family name around, which she has done again. She's leaving a massive trail of breadcrumbs right to herself because she's just throwing the Rose family name at literally anyone she can think of to get any kind of clout. And this is definitely going to come back to bite her.
And she left her family under a cloud. I mean, it's not like she's on the best terms with them in the first place. So
yeah,
you don't know if she does get into a sticky situation, whether they're even going to help her out.
Well, exactly.
We did also chat about the idea of like Colin DeBarge, you know, being jilted at the altar. We don't know, you know, what this guy is like. Is he looking for she's leaving this trail of breadcrumbs, but also she keeps doing it in front of Arcanists, like throwing this name about, you know, the first time to get into the Vondels and then the Arcanist just so happened to show up at the end. And then her kind of like using her name to gain entrance to this establishment to then meet an Arcanist who decides to read her thoughts. Like it's
And she did it in Beryon Fields as well to try and get into the Merry Prince.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, I'm just going to go here into the middle of this debauched drug fest and just name drop myself really obviously.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Gwen?
Not come back to haunt her at all.
I don't think Daddy's going to be very pleased.
But yeah, you know, what if he just completely cuts her off?
Yeah.
And then she's got nothing. Or, you know, how long is it before people start saying, oh, Gwendolyn Rose, I've heard about you and all the things that you've been up to, hussy.
Yeah.
A little bit creepy.
Trouble.
But also, hands up, like, not hands up because nobody can hear that. But who is getting the sense that this Clayne Yvette is a dodgy mofo?
Oh, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. And in my recap, I didn't mention his scholar either. Oratrix, I think their name was.
Oh, yeah. From the Asterix books.
Who we never meet. And despite Mouse Ruana having a good old scurry around the house, she doesn't bump into him anywhere either. And we assume he exists because, although they do have that discussion about the scholar existing.
Wait, the scholar is a scholar. And then they see someone with Gwen's face in librarian's clothes carrying books.
With a bunch of books. And it's, why do they have loads of books?
I just put that together.
Why are they in the library?
That was like, going to be my question. Why are they in the library?
And it kind
what,
of...
Is it Oratrix?
What you're saying makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Because
I mean,
it's Yvette's scholar, who also might be the faceless footman.
It's a possibility. Did we just...
There's definite mind flashes going on right now. Hannah, did you just turn a light bulb on, or is that...
I like that gif of that lady with all the calculations going past her face.
Yeah. But yeah, that was definitely one like big question that I had. It's like, why are they in the library? Why are they picking up all these books in the light of day? Yeah, especially if it is the person that they caught already, why would the first thing they do be to go to the library and pick up these ones? And it kind of... It's massive wealth of knowledge here as well, because we have like Orin is learning more about the Arcanist Consortium. He picks up a few of them. We hear, oh God, you know, what is they talk about again?
While you figure it out, also, I think David pointed it out in this episode, but this particular Arcanist, Clain Iavet, was sent specifically to try to read people's minds to figure out if they were murderers. And then the entire party were like, oh, a really high-level mind reader person, let's have dinner with him.
Yeah.
After we've been sent on a secret mission to investigate the Arcanists.
It's like, oh, also, oh, you seem so interested in us. I wonder why.
What are you doing, guys? What are you doing?
I did just find that information, by the way. So it learns about the founding of the formation of the Consortium, which is following the Accords from the Mortal Uprising, which is when kind of like Dravain as a country was established. And it was this circle of mages and the previous king, Rumath Taribor, that set up the Arcanist Consortium. And that's probably why, you know, Crowell was placed in there as well. And we're getting, you know, a flashback to what we were hearing before about these six mages, six mirrors. Oh my God. They're the original Arcanists.
And which one is do not trust? That's all I want to know.
Exactly.
All of them. Who's, all of them are do not trust. Scratchy, my God. Which one's spooky Cheshire cat
spooky face
that tries
mirror,
to
yeah.
slam into the mirror? Yeah. Who's that?
Could be Clain Iavet.
That does lead you to believe, I know it's not strictly about this episode, but it does lead you to believe that at least one of them is also still alive in shape or form, which is another terrifying 100%. Prospect all by itself.
I mean, Crowell was a lich. I fully believe there's another lich or something like a lich hanging around.
It's Jenny.
Oh, man.
It was Jenny all along.
It's Jenny. Of course it's Jenny. But who is the faceless footman?
Also Jenny. We've established that there are loads of them. Yeah, I've got to be honest, I'm a little bit on board with your theory here.
Oh, what, that it's Horatrix?
Yeah, and I will kind of like work on that theory a little bit later, because there's...
Okay.
When we talk about episodes later on, there are a few things that just made me think like,
Well, do you want to tell us about episode 24?
Yes, I will do that. Because I was the person that did the next episode. That was well done for remembering that. Anyway, I'm going to talk now about episode 24, which is entitled The Faceless Footman. So let's learn some things about them. This great, great episode, by the way. Like, really, really good on David's part. Great on the players who are kind of giving chase and kind of kept this really like dynamic soundscape of like, oh, this is happening over here and this is happening over here. But it kind of, it starts off with this moment in the library and like this rapid conversation between Gaius and Juna, who take off after this doppelganger. And then like Guy is following them more closely because Juna decides to stay and like try and let the others know what's going on. And that somebody's wearing Gwendolyn's face, which I think comes as a bit of a shock to Gwendolyn.
Yep.
But Gaius rounds the corner and basically sees this shapeshifter in front of a guard who then slashes them across the eyes and makes a run for the courtyard. So Gaius is just like, ah, this way, they're going outside. And then like runs out of the courtyard into the crowd, somehow manages to spot where they're running and they've changed into a drow. And then Gaius is like, right, okay, what can I do here? I'm going to cast Disguise Self on myself and turn into Arcanist Clain. But David does give him a little bit of an out there by saying like, oh, you want to cast this in the middle of the crowd? To which Gaius is like, oh, okay, maybe I don't do that. Although he did roll for it.
He did,
so this episode could have been completely different if they're screaming faceless footman and somebody changes shape right in front of them. I think I know what the crowd's reaction might be.
Yeah.
So fortunately, Gaius isn't arrested in this moment. However,
what a benevolent DM David is, honestly. Well, really gave him a minute for that one. I think a crueler person would have gone, okay, just let him
do it. See how this plays out.
He does have a little bit of a cruel moment, because the exact next thing that he does is the when Orin, I think Enkidu and Juna run straight out and start to follow Gaius. But Orin decides to stay and try and help this guard out with the bees, with his healing bees. And Gwendolyn, not knowing what to do, decides to stay with Orin. So as soon as this guard is healed and comes round, is like, ah, faceless footman, this person slashed me, and promptly arrests her. So maybe not so kind of malevolent in that moment, because it basically takes both Orin and Gwendolyn out of the game as they try and convince this group of guards that it was somebody wearing her face. But they basically, like, you know, rugby tackle her to the ground and, you know, pin her down and, you know, basically like, oh yeah, when the Arcanist gets here, we'll get to the truth of this, but we can't let you go beforehand, no matter what they try and do to stop that. Meanwhile, we've got the chase happening in the other part of town. Like, you know, Gaius is chasing after, calling out different things. Enkidu casts Expeditious Retreat on him so he can move at double speed and, like, manages to catch up with them. And he sees the this drow now, disguised as a drow, disappear into a clothing shop. And when they come in there, funnily enough, it's a bunch of people buying clothes and there's no drow in there. And it takes Juna to catch up with them. Like, Enkidu goes into a back room and nearly misses what happens. This person nearly gets away. But Juna comes in and instantly is like, detect thoughts. Which, just beautiful gameplay. I love how much this spell is coming in handy. But, like, David does this great, like, oh, I like this dress. This is a very nice dress. And, oh, I don't think they're watching me anymore. Oh, that one was from the library. And they're like, oh, my God, do something about it. But kind of tries to keep this doppelganger there and, you know, not let them out of the space. And then Akita's like, oh, I missed you, step out the door. And I punched them with my brass knuckles. Yeah. Which kind of then turns into an invasion of the body snatchers moment. As this shapeshifter assumes Enkidu's face and then promptly attempts to steal his clothes while they're just like fighting out in the street. You've got like Juna chromatic orbing, you've got Gaius who's at the sign, he's trying all his like bard spells. He tries to cast hold person, which doesn't take, and then later he tries to cast sleep on them, but this person's like, no, I know what you're doing, and he gets a poison dagger to the shoulder for it. But it's a big fight. Like, they are trying everything and sometimes rolling terribly, can't land anything. And then just as this new version of Enkidu is starting to get away, Gaius actually does manage to land a bard spell, and it's a good one because he casts Fairy Fire, which means that there is now a glowing purple Enkidu running along these streets, and it just gives them that little bit of help to chase this person down. And they eventually find themselves at a tavern called the Wise Man's Nook. This is where they finally see that flash of purple dart into a doorway. And it's a tavern owned by a guy called Targus, who really, really doesn't want them to come in there, is adamant that nobody's been in there, that they're not allowed in. And it takes Gaius to cast Suggestion with his uber-powerful ring and just be like, right, firstly, we are supposed to be here and go get the Arcanist. And so this guy just does, disappears out onto the street to do that, which gives these guys a little bit of time to find this secret passageway, which they are denied entry to. But kind of really clever moment from Juna here, because she chooses to send Ruana to go have a peek at what's happening in this secret area. And once Ruana makes her way down there, she, funnily enough, sees the oh-so-shifty jerky, Jerick, who is having a conversation with kind of a drow who's, or a female at least, whose like glowingness is starting to dissipate, but then watches this person like having a like intense conversation, a debate with Jerick, and then hopping onto a wagon full of carpets and kind of like them all being piled on top of her to hide her out of sight. And then we kind of cut back to the library and we find out what's going on there. Like, Gwendolyn is still trying to convince them that this is happening. And Orin does what Gaius was going to do, disappears for a moment, and he effectively casts Disguise Self on himself. And he comes back as the Arcanist. What's going on here? No, she's not the problem. Very Boris Johnson. And finally manages to free her. And there's this whole scene where the guards are like, oh, now we've got to check everyone in the town with your detect thoughts. We've kept everyone who was out in the courtyard and we've got them all lined up outside. And it's like 150 people that they were going to have to check over. But they managed to convince them that, no, we have to be out and looking for these people. And Gwendolyn's going to come with me because she's shown skills in this area. And it's at that moment that Targus turns up and basically says, like, oh, people are at my pub. No, that pub. So the guards go off to the other pub and Gwendolyn's like, right, I noticed that bit. Where is your pub? We're going there. Then they turn up right at the end of the episode where Targus is basically like, oh no, we can't really have an Arcanist in here because, you know, the kind of clientele that I have, they won't really feel that great if there's an Arcanist in the room. But Juna and Enkidu really cleverly manage to say, oh yeah, we're here for the carpet delivery, the carpet exchange. So they barter themselves passage down to the underground area so long as the Arcanist Orin stays upstairs. And this plan works really, really well, literally until they enter the room where Jerick is instantly just like, no, they're not. completely rumbles the situation. That's the episode ends on a quite dodgy cliffhanger. But yeah, I mean, amazing episode. Everything was really fast-paced. It was just a case of, like, keeping on this person. And there were so many times where they could have got away.
So many times where it just, you know, one number different and it could have gone in such a completely different way.
Yeah, for both parties as well. Like, there was a sleep spell that just didn't quite have enough, numbers rolled for it to just knock them out in that moment. But you think maybe an Eldritch Blast later and that spell would have landed. It's the same with Whole Person. Would have been perfect because it lasts for a minute.
Yeah.
But that's the spell that didn't land. The one that does is the Fairy Fire, which means that they can continue this chase. It's just, it was so clever. And I wonder
action-packed.
What we would have learned if they did manage to stop this person.
Yeah, it would be really interesting to have that just run over and over again and just see all the different possibilities, like multiple universe kind of.
Yeah, I want to see David's tangential, like, storyline. And also, what really would have happened if they hadn't managed to follow this person, if they'd never found the wise man's nook and seen where that went, what was planned for if they didn't discover that? You know, would it just have been going back to the library and dealing with the whole Orin and Gwendolyn situation? Would that have been fleshed out more? But
if the Faceless Footman had got away, maybe they wouldn't have needed to escape the city so quickly, and therefore they would stay, and whatever kind of ulterior motive they really have for doing all these extra murders, maybe their killing spree would have continued and we might have kind of found out what that thing they were trying to hide in their mind, what that really would have been.
It's also, I don't know, this episode left me with so many questions.
Same.
Firstly, like, who, you know, with the whole the carrying the books and stuff, it's clear that this person has an agenda. So who were the people that died? Who was murdered? What was so special about them?
And who did they frame?
Exactly. I mean, it is kind of like revealed a little bit from the guards that the person that they had arrested before had escaped. So there's a high chance that, okay, the Arcanist did find this person and lock them up, but they somehow managed to escape the prison cell.
Or
they were let free.
They were set out by the Arcanist because...
Because where's the Arcanist in this bit?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they turn up?
Really dodgy.
Yeah, they make a big thing about looking out to the courtyard and there's no Arcanist to be seen. You know, Orin checks, and then Gwendolyn does a little check as well. Nothing to be seen. And also, Targus, although he does kind of say, like, oh yeah, you know, the clientele that we have probably won't appreciate an Arcanist being in their presence, there's a weird relationship between them there that I didn't get the sense that this guy was really in fear of the Arcanist. Like, he didn't seem to care whether the Arcanist knew what was going on downstairs. It was more about how the customers would react to seeing him. So
do the Arcanists have a connection to the Hex?
Exactly.
And
or
is that connection
the Arcanist scholar?
Clain Iavet. Is it? I don't trust that guy.
I don't trust him one bit. You know, and he still hasn't turned up by the end of the episode when there's all this, like, fighting going on in the streets. Somebody's shop window gets smashed twice. it's a big spell slinger of an episode chase thing that we all needed.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. It was very exciting. And then it kind of, in the next episode, has a bit of a weird resolution, I find, at least.
Well, I mean, resolution is a choice of words, isn't
well,
it?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, what happens from there?
Pippa, do you want to tell us what happens in the next one? And then we can kind of, like, round up the discussion.
Sure, yeah.
Based on what we learn.
Mm-hmm. So this one is called The Carpet Job. And it starts up again down in the cellar with Jerick and Targus. You've got Junior and Enkidu. Enkidu decides he's going to try and fight his way out of this. And they get hit by a frosting bomb and immediately become completely compliant. And Jerick decides the best thing to do is to tell them to roll themselves up in some carpets and have a little nap. And obviously they have to do this. But Junior manages to send off little Mouse Rowana. She finds Gwen And they, between the three of them, with Oren still in his disguise, kind of head off to the cellar. Like, little Mouse Ruana manages to show them where to go. And they kind of deliberate about going down. And they go into the cellar, but Jarek sees through Oren's kind of arcanist disguise. There's another frosting bomb. And out of all of them, Gaius is the only one not affected. Thankfully, he realizes that he's completely outnumbered and out of his depth. He plays along with the frosting thing. All of them end up in the carpets. And after, you know, a bit of time, everyone else, apart from Gaius, is obviously told to go and have a little sleep. So they do. The wagons set off. Once they're clear of the city, Gaius sort of wiggles free of his carpet, ties up the driver of the wagon, frees his friends. And my favourite moment is just him absolutely flummoxed about what to do with his four poor friends who are just, you know, completely incapacitated. He's trying to do things to help them recover. He's going, let's go dunk our heads in the river. Let's, you know, let's have some game of slapsies.
Throw your tea away.
Exactly, yep. he realises they've just got to sleep it off. So he releases the wagon driver. Was that a good idea? Was that not? And they kind of sleep it off. They have a discussion once they're recovered. They decide to go grab Bessie and then kind of continue on to the Golden Forest and not go back inside the city. And then there's like a couple of other little things. Oren sends Heron an update about, you know, the mysterious scholar and the arcanist. Juna gives Gwen the pearl necklace from Deacon from the card game. That happens at that point as well. They continue on their journey. And then in the next morning, they glimpse Lake Drevain for the first time. And then the episode ends by this young girl running out from a clump of trees, screaming her head off. And she's being chased by this molten mass of fire and water. And both of them are running directly towards the party.
Perfect.
So they're like, we're in a town, there's a serial killer, there's something shifty going on, there's something to do with the hex. Oh, we've been kidnapped. Ah, let's not go back. Let's not touch it. Too hard, too complicated, not going back there. So who knows what's still going on?
Yeah, I want to know what was going back on in that city once they've left.
Exactly. I mean, because they do find out that it's not the same wagon that they were on that the faceless footman got onto.
So there was a moment, wasn't there, where Gaius was like, ooh, do I see anything moving on the wagon? And just for a moment, you're like, no.
It had its moments of cuteness, though, again, this episode, of just like, you know, everyone being like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll get in a carpet. Yeah, that sounds really nice. Oh, it's quite snuggly. Can't breathe, but it's nice in here.
I love a frosted
Enkidu. Frosted Enkidu and frosted Juna. So good.
Yeah. And the fact that Enkidu's patrons in his head were just going, no.
Yeah, screaming at him.
Yeah, and he's just, you know, talking about, he's like, oh, you know, what do you think I should do, guys? And just having a conversation with what seems to be like nobody.
But so frosting is, I mean, I'm struggling to think of another item that is that powerful in game, because it's effectively like some kind of charm, but using it weaponized as like a bomb that takes so many people out. It's literally, you fail that one throw, that one saving throw roll, that's it, you're done for hours.
Yeah.
And depending on the dose quantity, like, you know, Gwendolyn had when they're at Beryon Fields.
Quite a lot.
Just completely takes them out of the game.
Mm. Yeah. Is this where Oren's book, his beginner's alchemy recipe book, there was a recipe for bottled smoke? I'm wondering whether, given that they've got some frosting that they pinched from Beryon Fields, could he make himself?
Could they make a frosting bomb?
Bottled smoke frosting.
Oh,
I don't know. Does that work? Is that a thing?
I mean, I hope so.
If anyone could work it out, it's Oren.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see Oren like Batman.
With all the gadgets. You
know, the owlbear man.
I'm trying to imagine Oren going, I am the knight.
It's like the faceless footman there. I am Rostol's reckoning. I love this concept. But yeah, it's so many loose ends. And, you know, David, again, he's like, okay, well, you've chosen to go this way. Here's a girl, massive elemental. You've got to deal with that now. So you can't just get to the beginning of the next episode and be like, oh, no, you know, we're going to go back. They've committed now to the next stage of the journey. So all of that, you know, the, like we were saying before,
the Rose name being dropped in there. They now know that Gwendolyn had a lot to do with it. You know, she was momentarily arrested. If that gets back to the Arcanist, he's going to be like, oh yes, that's Gwendolyn Rose. I saw them yesterday. And the other person impersonating me would have been a part of that party. They've got an instant scapegoat of somebody using some kind of transformation spell on themselves, some kind of illusion to make them appear as somebody else. They can instantly, if they are these people behind the Faceless Footman, they can be like, right, it's them.
Mm.
Where have they gone?
Yeah. They basically came to town, had a dodgy conversation with an Arcanist, got involved in this massive kerfuffle at the library, and then bounced. They just disappeared, leaving like a wake of huge confusion, especially because
hysteria,
the prisoner has now escaped. And then they've left chaos and then gone, nah, we're not going to go back and clear that up.
Yeah.
Seems too difficult. It's scary. Let's keep going.
I mean, I understand that cut and run mentality, but when you are at the heart of something huge, I mean, they, you know, the guards are involved in this and know who a bunch of them are. Like I say, the Arcanist knows. And then they just have this brawl in the street with this face swapping person. So there are so many witnesses to the fact that they are involved in this. You know, they weren't exactly careful about where they were sending their spells. Yes,
Targus,
exactly.
Who enables the Hex to do some shady stuff, also now knows exactly what all of them look like and knows they were involved in all that.
Yeah. For a group of people on a secret mission, they're not being particularly stealthy.
Oh my God. Level 4.
Yeah, yeah.
I just one extra thing on this one. I enjoyed, it was obviously really funny with Gaius looking after his frosted friends, but I liked that he almost had like a kind of like a moral moment and actually realised he was, you know, a Gaius from like episode 3 or 4 would have been like, yeah, this is great. Let's mess with these people. But actually he's grown throughout these episodes. And now he's wants to look after his friends and make sure they don't come to harm. And that thing about them not being able to give their consent about their backstories. And I thought that was really sweet just to see how far he's come.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, and this is something that Chris does really, really well.
Yeah.
Is that he constantly gives us Gaius's internal monologue. The conflict that he is going through in those moments. So you do get to see him evolve. It's not like the way Ben plays Orin, which is very much like a closed book that you...
It's very insular,
You warm to. Yeah, you know, you kind of get notes of who Orin is, but Ben isn't there going like, oh, you know, well, Orin's thinking this and, you know, so therefore, but what comes out of his mouth is this.
Yeah.
We kind of have a sense that we know who Orin is, but what we get from Chris is his journey to that and like how much of what then comes out of his mouth is a lie. He's keeping us, you know, this kind of like audience knowing more than the rest of the characters do.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting thing for the character that he's chosen to play.
Definitely.
It's great.
Big up, my
I'm
mate.
So excited. I'm so excited to see how it all continues to develop.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because we've almost caught up now. There have been a couple of episodes that have been released that I'm looking forward to chatting with you guys again about. And Pippa, are you going to join us again?
I would love to. If you're happy to have me back, I would love to come back.
Come back,
please, because it's cut our workload in half.
Well,
please.
That's fine.
I'm joking.
It's nice to have people to just geek out about it.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's so great.
Oh, 100%. We have a lot of fun here.
Yeah. And hopefully next time we'll have fewer episodes to sum up, so we'll have more geek out time.
Delve deeper.
Exactly.
Yeah, I
get deeper into some theories.
100%. And I could tell that there was more that we wanted to say on these. And if we had the time in our recording schedule, we would 100% do that.
Yeah, it would be a 3-hour special. But
yeah, one day.
We'll do that next week.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm there.
But I think we may have like ever so slightly run over on time, but that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be for a 7-episode stretch.
No,
so,
I think we've done pretty well.
I think we were pretty concise.
Yeah. Apart from some of my retellings, maybe.
Not at all.
Got a bit excited about fleeing across rooftops. But to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. I'm pretty sure if you've made it this far and you're listening to a Superfan Chat episode, that we can probably call you superfans as well. So if you want to join in with the discussion, please do message us with your thoughts, your theories based on relevant episodes. Do it to the social media, because it helps other people find this podcast as well,
mm-hmm.
which I think we can all agree is definitely something we should be doing.
Something
other people
special.
Need to hear this. It really
and
is.
Sign up to Patreon so you can ask questions on the No Small Questions.
Yeah, and, you know...
Posit your theories about who the Faceless Footman is.
Yeah, actually, I want to know what other people think.
Yeah, me too.
Right?
Who do you think
it is?
Let's
start a poll.
I don't think it's Gaius. That's the only person I'm sure it's not. It could be. I mean... Oh, gosh. Yeah, what if he's able to duplicate himself? No,
I mean, Enkidu's got more than one
hole.
Person inside him. What if Gaius is multiple people? Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And on that bombshell...
I was just going to say.
Are we doing the sign-off? No, we're doing
we
one or three.
The 3-1. The 3-1.
Okay, ready?
Okay, so...
Anon for now!
Anon, everyone.
Anon.
Love you.
That's the best that we got.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.